ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into yet another installment of Nosebleeds, WFUV Sports' number one podcast for all things Major League Baseball, tri-state and beyond. I am here with Joseph Henry and Matt Benson. And Matt, that's a name I haven't gotten to introduce in a while on a podcast. I'm really happy to have you back here. I want to ask you though, how was abroad? I know it's been a while, and you know, it seems like you haven't been it feels like the absence is coming to a close, and it's exciting to have you back.
Oh yeah, it's great to be back. It's been a long time coming, but I'm so excited to be back. It's been a great summer. I'm just really excited to be back as part of the station for this upcoming year. It should be great.
I when I meant abroad, I was talking about that time you went to Europe in the spring. Yeah. By the way, I completely butchered the delivery on that. But how was, for the viewers at home, how was that?
Oh, it was great. Got to go to London, got to see Big Ben, Stabby, got to see it all, which is really cool.
Joe Henry, my fellow Bostonian, how are we?
I'm good, but that makes me sad because I'm going to London in the spring this upcoming year, and I'm like, I don't want to miss a whole semester at the station and have to be welcomed back like this. So it kind of, I don't know, gets me in my feels. But otherwise, I'm doing great. I've had a very baseball full summer. I'm interning with the Cape League, so I've had a lot of time to soak in, you know, our favorite American pastime. That's and awesome. To do so close to home in Boston, it's been awesome.
So I'm going to start with a surprise first topic that I didn't tell either of you guys about. It's big news out of the baseball world. The Fordham University Club baseball team has a new skipper. They hired a new manager. He goes by the name of Matt Benson. I believe the introductory press conference is during the club fair in late August, early September. I don't know, that we'll probably get more details sooner to come, but obviously a very winning program needed to hire a new manager, really technically a player manager, kind of a LeBron, GM type deal. But nevertheless, I got to ask Matt Benson how he feels about the hiring of Matt Benson.
Oh, I mean, first of all, being compared to LeBron James is it's enough of a compliment in itself. But I'm really excited for the upcoming season. You know, obviously tough to take over the reins from the great Jack Balboni, and of course Mike Calamari before him, WFUV legend as well. And I'm really excited for this year. So I believe the club fair, tentatively, I believe is August 28th. So if anyone's interested in joining club baseball, feel free.
Right around the corner. That's really exciting. No, I thought it would be funny to kick off with
I
that.
I appreciate the club baseball plug right there, you know.
No, exactly. You got to grow the brand. Exactly. Okay, so look, I feel like the story hasn't changed much in the tri-state. The Mets are still on fire. The Yankees are running around like chickens with their heads cut off, not used to playing. You know, I think still, as long as this tough streak has been for them over the past month and a half or so, it's still not the kind of baseball that any, you know, Yankee fan or member of the team should ever become used to playing. So I think it's never going to be something that sets in, but you're still seeing struggles on the Yankee side of things. We got the second installment of the Subway Series, a breakdown. And I think that's a good place to start, because for the first time since 2013, the Mets complete a clean sweep of the Subway Series. They take both games at Citi. They take both games in the Bronx. And what I thought was funny about this second installment, this second round, was that it was quite literally the same exact outcome, I guess you could say, of the first one at Citi Field. Albeit first, you know, game one was obviously a lot lower scoring than game one was at Citi Field. But in both, you know, two game series, you saw a close game one, you know, a win by, I think they won by two. The Mets won by two when they were in Queens. They won by one the other night in the Bronx. So you get a close game one that could have been either team's game. And then game two, you just get an absolute curb stomping. And it's the Mets obviously handing it down to the Yankees. Now, I want to start with you know, game one, because you saw somebody who has been on fire lately, and I find it really funny that he's been on fire because of just a lot of the slander and some of the struggle that he's, you know, seen in earlier in the season. It's former batting title winner Jeff McNeil, who is really the guy that hit the game, is really hit the game-winning home run in game one of this Subway Series, where he hits a two-run shot off of Michael Tonkin. And that's really the difference maker that puts them up 3-1. The Yankees only get one insurance run on an RBI double from Verdugo to bring it back to 3-2. But what I want to talk about first from the Subway Series is, it seems like even though the struggles are abundant for the Yankees, whether you talk about the inconsistency in the bullpen, whether you talk about whatever's not going right on the home front with their starting pitching, whether you want to talk about how top heavy the lineup is and how you're not seeing front to back offensive production, nothing can click on the same night, it appears, because, you know, you saw a gem of a start from Luis Gil, who was hitting his spots. He was looking good. He's really been good the last however many starts he's been out there, two or three starts after a rough patch. But it seems like whenever they pitch, they don't hit. And when they hit, they don't pitch.
Yeah, I feel like that's the hallmark of a team that's on a skid and a team that's, you know, having trouble getting back to their winning ways. And I think that that makes it really difficult to evaluate the direction that they want to go going into the trade deadline. Because, I mean, it's very obvious where their holes are in terms of depth in the order and on the field, and also in the bullpen, especially if you look at just last night with what happened with Clay Holmes. And I think that's, you know, it's emblematic of their struggles, right? You have a team that in close games, their bullpen blows it on a good start, and their offense isn't able to get enough run support. They're, as you said, very top heavy order. You know, they've been unable to rely on their kind of role player guys, on, you know, a Verdugo or a Cabrera or a Torres, LeMahieu, whoever it may be, in order to get big hits. Whereas, you know, they've needed Judge or Soto to get those big hits. Even Volpe as of late hasn't been able to come through in those kinds of situations. So it makes it a lot harder to foresee like where they want to go, what direction they want to go for the deadline, when if their hitting's on, their pitching's off. And if their pitching's on, their bullpen and their lineup isn't going to bolster it.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said there, Joe. I just feel like for a struggling team, it just feels like they have a lot of holes. And these are holes that were all filled at the beginning of the season when they were really hot and best team in baseball. I feel like going into the deadline, like you said, like you just don't really know what moves you need to make, just because some days there's a hole in the bullpen, some days there's a hole in the lineup, or multiple holes in the lineup. Other days it's the starting rotation. It's like, what? It's not like there's a one problem that you need to fix, which, you know, we'll get to the Mets later. Like, it seems like they just have one problem they need to fix to move on, like to move forward. Like, I feel like that just must make it what makes it really hard for the Yankees throughout this trade deadline coming up. It's just, you don't know what hole to fill.
And I don't think this is a team that the trade deadline is going to fix. You know what I mean? I don't think that making some additions, whether it be boosting up your arms or getting another consistent bat. Because I could see the Yankees going a couple of directions. I think obviously pitching depth is something that they need and something they've struggled with. They've had some injuries in the bullpen, and they've had just some straight up underperformance in the bullpen. But you could also look at, you know, trying to go after a good hitting second baseman, because that's really hard to come by with them sometimes. And you're seeing some inconsistency there. You might want to see them add a depth piece or something like that. But I think the problem is there's so much going on the home front that's within their control. The deadline is going to be up to who's willing to deal with them and make deals with them and figure out what's available, and they try to take the best of that. What's completely and utterly in their control right now is underperforming. And I don't know if this is something that baseball is a hard game to figure out sometimes, and it's an even harder game to be working in the front office for or managing a team of. So I understand I may not have all of the answers, but I don't think that the key, and I don't think anyone else does either, but I don't think that the key to this team moving forward and fixing their flaws is a fantastic trade deadline. But what I also really think the conversation around the Yankees right now kind of needs to shift to, and I think it's starting to happen a little more than it was before. I'm not going to take away from them the start of the season they had this year. That was absolutely insane. And I'm also not going to factor out the possibility of this, coming of age moment where they somehow figure it out and get back into those frequencies and finish the season that way. I'm not going to make any sort of overarching claims about the team, but in a general sense, this is not a well-constructed roster. And I really it makes it really fascinating how they did have such a hot start to the season, which again, I won't take from them. They were the World Series favorite and rightfully so. But what I think is really damning, and I don't know whether this is a Cashman problem or whether this is a Boone problem, because Cashman builds the rosters, but then Boone has to, in part, partially build the lineups. The other night in game one of the Subway Series in the Bronx, they had Jamai Jones batting leadoff, and they had JD Davis batting in the cleanup spot, to the point where the Mets were pretty much, this is basically what Jose Quintana did. He refused to pitch Aaron Judge. He would walk Aaron Judge every time Judge stepped up to the plate, put him on first, and then JD Davis would just strike out behind him every time. I think JD Davis had two or three strikeouts, went 0 for 4. By the sixth or seventh inning, I believe, both Jamai Jones and JD Davis were pinch hit for. That has to be a really humbling experience as a manager to have your leadoff guy and your cleanup guy, really the only two spots in a nine-man batting order that have a specific role. Because you think about it, everyone else is just about get on base, spray gaps, just do something, put the ball in play. But a leadoff man's job is to start the fires, to get on base, and to start the base traffic. A cleanup hitter's job is to be someone that hits for power, has the top three hitters in the lineup causing base traffic in front of them and spraying gaps and hitting homers. So you think about the only two parts in a lineup where there's like a job title almost, and they both are pinch hit for in the seventh inning. That's got to be a humbling experience for a manager.
No, like I don't mean to disrespect Austin Wells because he hit a bomb last night. But when I looked at the scorecard and I saw Austin Wells hitting cleanup for the Yankees last night, I was like, "What the heck
Right, because
are we
he's
doing? That's
great. He's actually
insane."
been really good, but he's not a cleanup hitter.
No, and no universe on a team that has World Series aspirations is Austin Wells hitting cleanup. And I think you raise a great point that the lack of depth of this order has it hampers even the Yankees' better bats because teams can afford to pitch around guys like Judge and Soto, knowing that the guys that they're going to get to aren't going to be productive. But what makes this even more of an issue and why I'm hesitant to say that they can fix all their problems offensively at the trade deadline is that they have guys that they're building around that they're going to need to play every day that aren't producing. You're not going to move Volpe, you're not going to move Verdugo. You need more out of LeMahieu. I mean, all of these guys, it's not like you're going to trade them or you're going to get someone new to fill in for them. You're still expecting them to be everyday guys, and they're just not producing to the point where teams can afford to pitch around certain guys in order to get to these other guys because you only have two bats, maybe three each night that are actually a threat.
Yeah, it's just a tough place for with the lineup, and it puts Boone in a tough position to just figure out a place where the Yankees can actually score runs, because obviously you're going to put Soto and Judge in the 2-3 hole no matter what, but it's just who can you put in the leadoff spot to get a guy on base from the drive in an RBI? Who can you put in a cleanup spot so they don't have to throw around Soto and Judge? And it's just a really bad situation for Boone. And it's I don't know how much of it's on him, how much of it's on just the underperformance of players. Like, you bring in Verdugo, he's supposed to have a good year, but he's hitting like 230 this year. Like, he's been fine this year, hitting around 250, OPS close to 700, like fine year, but he's not a guy that's going to move the needle offensively. And then it's just Glaber's been down. Like, all the names in the lineup that have been struggling and could be your four hitter are just underperforming, where it just puts Boone in a tough situation as the manager to put in a guy in your lead up or lead off spot or four hole to bring in Soto and Judge and to force the pitchers to not throw around them.
And then game two, I just quickly just touched on it. Game two of the Subway Series was, I mean, if you're a Yankee fan, was just unwatchable. Garrett Cole comes in, who is starting to find himself as of his last few starts. And you see Lindor hit two homers. You see Alonso go yard. You see Tyrone Taylor, of all people, go yard. 12-3 is the final. Just an absolute ass-kicking in front of their own barn in Yankee Stadium. A bit of a sour ending to the Subways. Because, again, even, like, you know, the Mets clinched the Subway Series when they win game one of the second series. But it was at least a close game, and it was at least okay, let's go out there for pride and take this last game and not get swept. No, that is not what happened. But I do want to talk, just go a few days further into the week, back, you know, to yesterday. And whew, I'm going to hide my smile talking about this game. Well, actually, no, because honestly, Boston didn't deserve to win that game last night. Only a team as pitiful as the Yankees have been playing right now would have found a way to hand that to them, because Boston's bullpen is unwatchable. Anyway, Yankees drop another game. That's three straight to the Boston Red Sox. 9-7 is the final in Fenway Park. You saw the loss getting delivered to Luke Weaver, who unfortunately, you know, what's funny is if there's any Yankee pitcher that I have to see a loss be handed to, I really hate to see it be him, just because of how strong he's been for them practically the entire season. But, you know, the Red Sox did take the lead back in the eighth inning when Luke Weaver was on the bump. Now, Nestor Cortez gets the start, gets hit around a little bit. It wasn't necessary. I mean, he struggled on the road, you know, the entire season, but he goes 4 2/3, 9 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. And, you know, you see Tommy Kahnle come in. He's clean. He gives you an inning with 3 strikeouts and a walk. So, you know, really nothing that didn't go right for him. It's once you got into the back half of the bullpen that was where things kind of went haywire, because you saw Tim Hill come in. He gives up a run. You saw Luke Weaver come in the eighth. He gives up 3 runs. You saw Clay Holmes come in relief, you know, in the eighth inning to take over for Luke Weaver. He gives up another run. We were just talking about how incomplete the team feels right now, because it seems that no two sides of the ball can be clicking on the same night. And when we were just talking about how dead the Yankees lineup has been offensively, I mean, last night, who didn't hit? You know, Verdugo was getting in there. He had 2 hits. Judge hit the longest home run in the history of baseball last night. I mean, Jesus Christ, have you seen a home run like that one in Fenway? You know, Austin Wells hit a home run. Anthony Volpe hit a home run. So, like, the guys came to hit last night. They did not make it easy for the Boston pitching staff whatsoever. But even still, with all the offensive firepower they have last night, they still fall short because of the back half of that bullpen.
Yeah, just like everything you said. I mean, it felt like through the first 7 innings of the game that the Yankees were bouncing back after the ugly, ugly Subway Series sweep. And you would think, okay, maybe they put that behind them. The offense is finally going. They score 7 runs. And then, just like to Joe's point earlier, when a skidding team is in a skid, there are holes everywhere that just seem to randomly pile up. When the offense is going, all of a sudden the bullpen's not. And all the points you made with Hill, Weaver, even Clay Holmes letting up the run as well in the eighth, it just seems like they're just finding ways to lose. That's I feel like the best way to put it.
I think it's especially scary to see as a Yankees fan, considering the past 6 games or so for the Red Sox, where if this happened in the past 2 series against the Dodgers and even against the Rockies, where Aaron Judge hits a ball where I've literally never seen a ball land there at Fenway Park.
That was insane.
It was unbelievable. I think they said it was the 4th longest home run in Fenway Park ever.
Doesn't shock me.
That's insane. the Red Sox, since the All-Star break, for as great as they had been going up to the All-Star break and the run that they had been on, had been finding ways to lose games in a similar way that the Yankees have. So I think it's a testament to just how much the Yankees have been struggling that you have a game in which two teams that have found ways to lose games of late are knotted up, and you have the Yankees go ahead and they found a way to lose the game even more than the Red Sox, who, as you said, had no business really winning that game after Judge and Wells going back to back.
And then, Joe, I wanted to toss this one over to you just because I felt like it'd be fun to kind of point out. I mean, is it just me, or do the Yankees just really struggle pitching to Seydan Rafaela? It seems like every time that he's facing New York, something bad happens for that pitching staff.
Yeah, I love to see another Yankee killer enter the fold for the Red Sox. I think I saw it. He is a third of his career home runs are against the Yankees. That's ridiculous. It's always in the clutch too, right? He had that 2-run shot yesterday that brought it to within one, and then
that one in the 10th.
I was about to say let off the 10th inning game. Yep. Of that extra inning game in Yankee Stadium, where he hit the 2-run shot. It's not just that he's hitting the Yankees, he's hitting them when it matters most.
Yep. Well, dude, it's tough because the Yankees are, that was game 105 yesterday for the Yankees, which means you're sitting just less than 60 games to go in the season, which I say that like it's a lot. That's a lot of games left. A lot of games for anybody. Any team that's any sort of contender right now can fall right back out of it. The next team that we're about to talk about, the New York Mets, all is well over in Queens right now. There's still plenty of time to fall back out of it, which means on the flip side, there's plenty of time for the Yankees to flip back into the right, swing of things and get rolling. But with 60, we'll call it 60. It's 57 games to go. Where do you guys see the Yankees finishing? Because right now they're in the top, they're in wild card one, I believe. The Orioles retook the first place in the East. Is that what you expect the standings to look like the rest of the way? Do we see a resurgence happening? I know resurgence is a weird word for a team that's still, 15 games over 500, but the way that they've been playing as of recently, it would be a resurgence. Where do we see this team going once this regular season comes to a close?
I see
you don't have to give your playoff prediction, but just where
they are. Sure. I see the Yankees getting back on track to some extent, but I have a lot of trouble seeing them overtake the Orioles, especially because I don't see the Orioles slipping. As you said, 57 games to go. There's still plenty of time for a team above a playoff contending team like the Yankees in the standings to slip. I don't see that happening with the Orioles, especially with the moves they're making at the deadline, filling, they had like three guys out for the season as far as starting pitching goes, and they go and they get a starter. And that lineup has no holes at all. They're bolstering the bullpen as well with Felix Bautista being out. I just don't see this team slipping. I think they're going to hold on to the AL East. In terms of the wild card race, just the way that the Royals have been playing and the way that the Red Sox, this past seven games aside have been playing, I think that both of those teams are on track to finish better. The Yankees, that's just where they're pacing. The Yankees are going down. The Red Sox and the Royals have been tracking upwards. And then the Mariners are also buying heavy at the deadline. That's another wild card team if they don't win their division. Another team that I'd anticipate probably finishing above the Yankees if things keep going at this pace. So unless the Yankees really have some kind of spark plug where they get a guy at the deadline, and yeah, it's probably not going to fill all their holes, but maybe it kind of reinvigorates the clubhouse and gets guys back on a run and they really get hot again. I feel like, given the padding that they have in the standings right now, given just how torrid their start to the season was, they still have a great chance of making the playoffs, but they really do need to get back on track. It's not like they can just slide to the finish line at this current trajectory and expect to beat teams that are pacing upwards in terms of, Red Sox, Royals, Mariners, other wild card contenders.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard for me to catch the Orioles at this point with how consistent the Orioles have been and just how complete their lineup feels, especially with them picking up pitching at the deadline. We'll obviously talk about that a little bit later, but I just, it's going to be hard to see where they end up in the wild card standings, because I think they are going to still end up making it. I really love this Red Sox team, but it's just going to be hard because I know they have one of the most difficult remaining schedules in baseball, and they're obviously a very young team, but you know, they could stay hot. You never know. Like, it seems like a team that's finding a way to win games no matter what, except from obviously the 7-game slight skid. But the Yankees need to play better than this if they want to make the wild card. And I think they're a better team than how they're playing. But if they keep this up for another 3 weeks, then I could definitely see them like getting out of, I could see them getting out of the wild card spot and looking on the outside in.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Boston and having a hard remainder of the season. I really think this team, I love this team. As you guys know, as you can tell by what's on my wall and on my head and on my desk. But I really see that. I really see their ceiling being the second wild card spot. I think I think the most realistic expectation for them is the third wild card spot, if I'm being honest. I think their ceiling is the second wild card spot, or worst case scenario, they miss the offs and me and Joe are very upset. But as far as the Yankees, I see I really see them holding down the first wild card spot by the skin of their teeth. I think one of the things that's been really funny about, you know, that pretty historic start that they, you know, began the season with was just how much insane like cushion it gave them for how bad they've been for the last month. If they start that season any less powerful than they did, and you look at the last 2 months of baseball that they played, they wouldn't even be in the picture right now. They wouldn't even, they'd quite possibly be out of the wild card picture as well. So it really almost is like they have a savings account that they've just been kind of burning until it's, you know, they get desperate and they're out of money. But I do think that this team, I don't think that this team is bad enough to drop out of the wild card entirely. I think I understand the doomsday preparations for how bad this team has been playing. I'm not going to say that's unwarranted for some people who feel like the Yankees might miss the playoffs, because you know how New York fans can get. Honestly, it doesn't even take a New York fan. It just takes an objective baseball fan. This team has been hard to watch for the last 2 months. So I get where it's coming from. But for anything I can say about how incomplete I think this roster is, and while I don't think that this team is a World Series contender at all, just me personally, I don't think this team is bad enough to drop all three wildcard spots. I think it would be pretty humbling if they don't even make the first wildcard spot. I think if they drop into two or three, that's going to be a pretty tough pill to swallow. But guess what? That's still a trip to the playoffs. And whenever we talk about MLB playoffs and undesirable playoff spots, I say one thing every time, and it's 2019 Washington Nationals. No one thought that team was going to win the World Series. I apply that factor to every single team once we get to playoff time. Once you get there, it's a clean slate. So I think this Yankees team is a lock for the playoffs. Whatever that spot will be, I don't know. I personally don't think it'll be as the American League East champion. I think it will be the Baltimore Orioles that hold down that spot. But I don't see this team dipping any further than the first or second wild card spot. And that's, you know, that's just me. I think they're a lock for the playoffs. But I do want to hop on the 7 train, head over to Queens. Let's talk about the Mets, because this is a good team that's in a good place right now. The vibes are immaculate over there at Citi Field. I was just there last night, saw them beat the Braves 8-4. It was an absolute home run frenzy. Got to see former Boston Red Sox J.D. Martinez hit a grand slam, kind of ignite the crowd. That was really cool. But, guys, this team is in business, man. I mean, that was their 15th win last night in the month of July. I believe that leads the major leagues. They're 15-3 in their last 18 home games. And in that span, they've outscored opponents 78-46. With that win last night, they now lead Atlanta in the standings by half a game. They're in the wild card one spot in the National League. They're 7-3 in their last 10. That's 5 straight wins for them. This team is on fire despite a streaky bullpen, a very, very streaky bullpen. And you even saw a little bit of it last night. Obviously, nothing that altered the game because they had a 7-run third inning. But this team is fun right now, guys. I really think, you know, they've been statistically the best team in baseball since I believe it was June 3rd. They've had the best month of July so far. Are you guys buying stock yet? Because I understand there's a lot of season left, and with such a long baseball season, there's plenty of time to have upward trends and downward trends. It's literally like a stock. It's like following a stock. So with that being said, you see this team is now multiple games over 500. First wild card spot. You got all the good things happening for them. Mad that you might be sweating a little bit if you're taking them serious. Is this a team we're buying stock in yet?
At least for me as a Phillies fan, I'm still not too. but I applaud them for the last 2 months of baseball that they've been playing. I think after how bad their start was, I thought they were going to finish just one of the bottom 5 to 10 teams in baseball. They've certainly turned that around. Francisco Lindor's completely turned around this season. Now he's up there in the MVP candidate now, and he's had an incredible year. The one thing that does worry me as a Phillies fan about the Mets is just that Pete Alonso has not had a great year, and they're still doing this well. Even with that, I mean, JD Martinez has even been a little bit cold outside of that Grand Slam yesterday. It just feels like their lineup, in completely opposite fashion of the Yankees, it feels like when guys are going through slumps, other guys are picking it right up, whether it's Vientos or Alvarez. It just feels like their lineup is very complete from top to bottom. Like, obviously, Neil, another name that started off really cold, turned it around a little bit. Nimmo's been consistent this year. Like, it just feels like they have a lot of solid names, solid guys in their lineup. And the rotation's fine. I don't think the rotation's going to scare anybody. So I think especially once you come to the playoffs, I think they're going to get exploited that way. And their bullpen's nothing to be worried about either. So I think those are going to be the two reasons why I wouldn't be too worried about the Mets going down the stretch, because I think right now their pitching's hot, but I don't think it's going to be sustainable for them.
Yeah, what's intriguing about the pitching is that they've been able to put together this run. You said like 78 to 46 over the past 18 games or something. That's like 2.5 runs a game that your defense has given up. For their pitching to be this hot without Kodai Senga, assuming that the injury went down with that calf strain last night, isn't too serious. If he's able to get back within, you know, 2 weeks and be able to, you know, be that guy, that ace for them going towards a playoff push, I think that's a huge momentum boost for them. I do still think they need help on the starting front, especially when you think about if you're a wild card team playing a wild card game or a divisional series. You need not just starting, but you need bullpen help, because, you know, you look at when your philosophy is to win one game or to win two games as a team, you don't do that just by having a starting pitcher throw 6 2/3 and then have 2 or 3 relievers come in. It's usually a 4 innings, give it all you got. And then you're leaning on your bullpen heavy, and the Mets don't have that in terms of the guys that they have in the bullpen period, but also in terms of finding guys who can consistently perform when you get to a situation like the playoffs against a team, you know, they'd be lining up to face like the Braves right now, I think would be the team they're playing in the playoffs. If things were to hold, you need way better bullpen, and you also need another arm in terms of your starting rotation. The lineup, though, has been very, very solid throughout. It's hard to find a place where they can really get like a pound-for-pound upgrade at the deadline. So I think that it's kind of obvious where they have to go in order to improve, in terms of probably adding one more arm in terms of a starter, and maybe one or two arms in the bullpen, and there are plenty of guys on the market for that. Like, even if you look within the division to a guy like Tanner Scott, that's a perfect guy to add, you know, a lefty out of the bullpen who can lock things down and be kind of like a setup guy or even a closer for you. It's pretty obvious where the Mets have to go in terms of their bullpen. or in terms of what they have to do at the trade deadline in terms of bolstering the bullpen. But still, despite that, just given their volatility, you know, if we want to stay in the stock market analogy, I have trouble just like, you know, as a consumer, as someone who might be buying stock, I don't have the kind of disposable income to safely bet on the Mets. You know, I want to bet on a team like the Orioles where I know that that's a safe pick, right? That's a low risk stock to buy. Mm-hmm. The Mets, that's a high risk stock. And I, at this point, as great as they've been, I'm not comfortable putting my money in that stock.
One of the things that they that did break during the game last night, which I think is very relevant to what you guys both, a kind of a sentiment that you guys both echoed. So I'm sitting in the press box last night at the game, and a tweet breaks that I actually had. I actually ended up retweeting it like in the middle of my coverage because it was like breaking news. David Stearns making his first, he made his first move of the trade deadline last night. He sent some minor leaguers, a couple minor leaguers in the Mets farm system to Seattle for Reen Stanek, who is a closing pitcher. He is a, he's got a four seam fastball. He's a hard throwing pitcher. He sits in the high 90s, can even touch triple digits here and there. He's got a split finger fastball. He's got a slider. So he's got an interesting pitch mix. He is a 4.33 ERA, but this year, you know, that's a career ERA, but this, I'm sorry, I'm confusing all my prep on him. This year, he's a 4.33 ERA, but he was part of the 2022 Houston Astros that won the World Series. And in that season, he was a 1.15 ERA with 62 strikeouts in, I believe it was 54 in like two thirds innings. So this is a guy who has some experience under his belt, throws hard, throws for velocity, has an interesting pitch mix. Definitely what you want to see, especially because I think the Mets were sort of in a unique position in that you obviously want to get the best talent that you can at the deadline. You're not just going to be throwing prospects around to just pull some Joe Schmo off another team and say, hey, your spot's filled. But at the same time, this Mets bullpen is so razor thin right now because of one, just the general kind of inconsistency you're seeing in some performances out of their bullpen, but two, it's been injury ridden all season with all, you know, different guys bouncing back and forth. To me, that's a really smart pickup and a really safe pickup for David Stearns to make with 4 days to go before the trade deadline, before things really kick up. You got a guy who's played postseason. And that's the other thing I really like about this. If this is a team with postseason aspirations, if this is a team that is, I was just asking you guys before, if anyone's buying stock into a 2022 World Series champion on the bump in your bullpen, that's the kind of guy I like seeing you bring in. And he's shown that he can perform in those positions because the stat line I read to you from that season was phenomenal. So it's a big first move from them heading into the you know, closer to the trade deadline, which I believe expires on Tuesday, I think it is. You know, I'm curious to see what other moves the Mets make because another pitcher is absolutely necessary. Will they touch any of the – because the Mets are in a unique spot here where a lot of the pieces of their batting order have started to find themselves. And by started to, I mean, you know, over the last month or so, whenever it happened for each specific player. But you have multiple guys that you would consider to be, air quotes, rental players on this team. Harrison Bader's on this team. JD Martinez is on a one-year deal. Even Luis Severino, Sean Manaea, those guys are all on short-term, really team-friendly, player-friendly deals. So part of you, you know, a certain type of baseball fan may say, hey, we got a lot of capital here, and they're all guys that are performing pretty well to decently well. Do we ship any of these guys away? But there's also the approach of like, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. This team's winning games. Are these really the guys that you're going to want to touch and send somewhere else when this team has worked so well as a unit for the last 2 months? So I really think it does put a lot of pressure, a good kind of pressure, because it's a contending team that wants to make the postseason, but it's going to put a lot of pressure on David Stearns these next few days.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that whole philosophy of, like, when you're a good team, what do you do with the deadline? You get guys that are probably on expiring deals that other teams are looking to sell on and get a return on now. If you're a selling team, you sell those guys that are on expiring deals that you know you're going to get something out of them now. And if you don't weren't to deal them now, okay, you keep them, you don't make the playoffs, and they leave for a better team in free agency. If you're a good team, you go and get those guys. You want to have rental players on your team if you're a buying team, not because of their long-term value to you, because obviously in the long term, you'd want to sell those guys and get a return on your investment. But when you're contending, you have a certain window and you need to fill your lineup as best as possible in order to maximize your chances within that window. So as a contending team, yeah, you have guys that are on 1 year, 2 year deals that given their age or given their performance don't make sense in terms of how you want to build this team looking 5 years into the future. Those are still guys that you need in order to fill holes to have a chance at winning, at making the playoffs, potentially winning the series, the World Series for this year. So I don't think, I'm not with the philosophy of, yeah, these guys are, they're performing well enough for us right now, but obviously they don't have a ton of long-term value. Like they're probably going to leave for a new team next year or ask for a big raise next year. When you're a winning contending team, I just don't agree with the what some fans might see as, oh, we should sell these guys regardless. I think that those guys are impactful, that they have value in terms of you trying to maximize the window that you have.
Yeah, I really don't see any way where the Mets trade away Yaelic Bader or Martinez. And personally, I just feel like there's no reason they should really try and change their at least their starting lineup as a whole. I think there's, you know, there are a couple positions like backup outfielder that you could platoon with a guy. You could pick up a guy like Winker, like possibly just to try and be a platoon outfielder. Like, I think those are the kind of moves you make to the lineup. I don't think you make a move that's taking a guy out of your lineup because he's on an expiring contract. Every year there's going to be offseason pickups, like a guy, like another Harrison Bader or another Martinez. But those are also guys that you trade for if you're a team that's trying to make the playoffs. So I don't think there's any reason for the Mets to trade those guys away when they are guys that are performing well and they're on cheap team-friendly deals. Like, I don't think there's any reason to get rid of that. And also just the vibes of the team right now, I don't see there's any reason to change that. I'm a big proponent of not messing with what's working. And, you know, I think there are moves to be made in the bullpen. There's a starting pitcher to get for the Mets, but I really don't think you mess with the actual lineup itself.
They're one of the most lovable teams in baseball. I mean, it feels like every time you, well, maybe not for you, Matt, but it seems like every time you turn around, there's a fun story surrounding the team, whether it's the grimace, whether it's, you know, Jose Iglesias becoming a pop star, whatever the case may be, there's always some fun story surrounding. But I could not agree with either of you guys anymore. And whenever, you know, my first season covering the Mets was last summer, and I still think of it now as we approach the deadline. And getting to see it kind of up close in person, it really made me think about there's certain ways in which, you know, you can judge off the way a GM or a front office handles a deadline. You can tell how they're viewing the season. And the way that I think about it is how, and this kind of ties into what you guys were saying just about, like, you have guys that are performing, you should let them continue to enhance your team. Why are we thinking about contract lengths and this sort of stuff? Obviously not a great year for the Mets last season, but by the time the trade deadline, they were still not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs yet. So there was still a chance for them. It was a lot. I think they were like 16 games out of first place, but it was like 5 or 7 games out of the wild card, the last wild card spot. There was a lot of competition for it. But my point being is, it's like, okay, you know that this is not going to be a division winning type here. Hell, you know, this isn't even going to be a division runner up type here. But they were not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs yet. What do? They sell. And who do they sell? Tommy Pham, who had a better batting average than pretty much every guy on the team, had a better hard hit rate than pretty much every guy on the team. So when you saw it, you know, that sort of sent the message to the fans about how they view the rest of the season to be, because it was, hey, we're selling off one of our mathematically one of our best hitters on the team because we know his contract is going to expire and we want to generate some value for it rather than continue to have him help stay around and help them win games. So it's really important, you know, fans pay attention to those kind of things. You know, people pay attention to those kind of things. You want to make sure And that's why you couldn't pay me enough to do the job that these GM guys do in baseball. I love this sport, not that much. But either way, important deadline coming up for the Mets, who are red hot right now. Wild card one spot secured at the moment for now. They got two more games against Atlanta this weekend. If they could sweep Atlanta, that would be enormous for them in their momentum in the National League East, as they are chugging right along behind the Philadelphia Phillies. But we're going to move away from the tri-state talk. We're almost done here, but I do want to talk about, just because the elephant in the room, it is the trade deadline, and we got a lot to not a lot yet, but moves have started to be made. And I do want to start to hop into them because a couple of them are pretty eye-opening. Let's start right off the bat. Randy Arozarena is a Seattle Mariner. And what was funny about this one, the news broke a few days ago. I woke up to the news, which was really funny. The news was made public right around 1 a.m. It was in the middle of the night. He's in the midst of a pretty down year. He's hitting 211. He's got 15 home runs, 16 stolen bags in the first 100 games of the season. But you still have to imagine that he was a pretty big name in the trade market this year, because you never know if with a guy like him and his athletic ability, both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, you never know what a change of location could do for him. So I knew that him having a down year was not going to make him any less coveted of a prospect when this trade deadline came around. But what I really think is huge for Seattle here is, and there's obviously some what ifs, you know, Randy has to find his stride, because as I just said, it's a down year for him. But this Seattle team has to be one of the worst good teams I've ever seen. To have a double-digit lead in games in the American League West, only to get dethroned over the span of about a month and a half to 2 months by the Houston Astros, in a very New York Mets-esque turnaround. The Mariners, who are objectively a good baseball team, have a 660 team OPS this season, which is the third lowest in the majors. They are winning as many games as they possibly can off of as minimal offensive production as they possibly can. And while that may temporarily win you some games and keep you alive in standings, that's not going to win you a World Series. And if there's one thing that Seattle fans want, it's a World Series. So I really, really, really do like this pick up, or this pickup for them, barring that Randy Arozarena is able to kind of turn things around and really heat up, and perhaps maybe a change of location was something good for him.
Yeah, I think it could be an interesting move for Seattle. I don't know how much, even if Randy plays to his career numbers, which is right around a 760 to 770 OPS. Like right now he's low 700s, which is fine. I don't know how much of that's going to move the needle for the Mariners, but like you said, with a team 660 OPS, like that's going to be an improvement from where they are. It really feels like for Seattle, just the offense is where they're lacking. So taking a flyer on a Arozarena, who, you know, has shown flashes throughout his career of being an insanely good baseball player. His rookie year was one of the best that I've seen in recent years. And he's an exciting player to watch, but, you know, does he need a change of scenery, or is he just kind of just having a down year? Where is he in his career? Is this the player he is? He's still a young player, so you don't really know. I think he has the upside to do it. It's just a matter of whether it'll happen over the course of this next 3 months for him to make his turnaround.
Yeah. Before I talk about what this figures for Seattle, it's just like, it's really crazy to see the Rays' downfall like this. Like, it's very surreal, because this is a team that you felt like was just going to be contending like for the rest of our adult lives with the way that they've been building the past several years. And they still, like, you know, they're having a bad year, but they're still not out of the playoffs. They still have like a 15-20% chance of squeaking in there, and they still have plenty of talent. So it's just very weird to see them sell two of their biggest pieces right off the bat in at the trade deadline. And for Seattle, I think Arozarena, like, oddly enough, fits in perfectly in terms of a guy who's great potential and has just been terrible this year. Not terrible, but, you know, not nearly as good as you would expect him to be. You know, he fits in perfectly in the outfield with Julio Rodriguez, who a lot of people thought was going to be the MVP this year. And that's what actually excites me about the Mariners. I don't know if they have the talent offensively to win the World Series, but with just how phenomenal the rotation is, I mean, just looking at that, Luis Castillo, George Kirby.
George Kirby is one of the nastiest pitchers I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm a big George Kirby guy. Logan Gilbert. I mean, their rotation's insane. To see them contending for a playoff spot with this little production from their offense, and now to see them buying heavy, see if they can get another piece in the order. You have to assume that a Rosarena and Julio Rodriguez are going to start performing at least a little bit better than they have been, especially those are guys who are known to be kind of clutch guys. So as you get down the stretch and are trying to make that playoff push, I actually really like where the Mariners are in terms of, you have to think that as bad as their offense has been, they're probably going to get better. And for as bad as it's been right now, they're still doing well enough to be a playoff team. So I actually really like where the Mariners figure in all of this. But as I was saying earlier, it's so surreal to see the Rays selling at this juncture, and just to see how quickly things fell apart for them. I'm not saying that it's like I feel bad about it, because like I kind of like to see it, but
no, I
like,
don't. I don't feel bad about it at all, actually. But I do think it is kind of fascinating to see the amount of talent that is no longer, that was once belonging to the Tampa Bay Rays, no longer belonging to the Tampa Bay Rays. One other thing I will say before we move on, because I know we're just kind of rapid firing these trades, is that he has had a down year. He has had a rough year. But the Mariners are also picking him up at the perfect time. This is the point in the season where everyone sort of starts to lock in and get down the home stretch and really need to perform at their best and put their best foot forward heading towards the playoffs. He did have an atrocious start to this season. But since the month, I believe it's since the start of June, he's hitting like 285, 284, something like that. So he's hitting at basically the highest clip he's hit all season as he's getting relocated. So that's really the best that you can wish for. If you're Seattle in this, is that you're catching a guy who, yes, is in the midst of a rough season, but is right now in the middle of the hottest streak of the year that for him.
And yeah, he's got a 900 OPS in the month of July.
Yeah, so I mean that's the thing. He's absolutely raking, and maybe he was excited. Maybe he knew he was getting out of Tampa and he didn't want to be there anymore. I don't know. I wouldn't want to play at Tropicana either. It looks like a weird ballpark. But did you see? Have you guys seen any of the new like 3D like models of the new, what's supposed to be the new proposed Rays ballpark?
Yes.
It looks sick, but the only thing I didn't understand is they're making it the smallest ballpark in Major League Baseball by capacity.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna say by dimensions, which would
have been really fun. By capacity. They wanna be Fenway so bad.
It makes sense because no one goes to the, like, if you look at the Rays were like in the ALDS, had a great team 3 years ago, and you look in the stands of like a 5-5 game in game two versus the Red Sox, and there's like five people there.
Yeah. No, it made no sense at all. You know what? Maybe that's good for them. The trop is just bad vibes, man.
Apparently it's very inaccessible.
Yeah.
Apparently it's very hard to get there.
And a catwalk that catches fly balls. Staying on the topic of Rays just not staying in Tampa Bay any longer, Zach Eflin is headed to the Baltimore Orioles, which this one is a humongous pickup for Baltimore when you consider what they're contending for right now, looking to hold down that top spot in the American League East. They've already had some crucial injuries, losing, you know, John Means, Tyler Wells, Kyle Bradish. You know, the list goes on. For as bad a luck as they've had in the department of starting arms, this is a huge pickup for them because this is one of Tampa's guys. Zach Eflin is a consistent, a good pitcher. He's in the midst of a pretty decent season right now. He's had a little bit of struggles as of late. I think his ERA is raised to right over four. I think he's at about 4.09 right now. But part of that's
because he hasn't been striking as many batters out this season. He's striking out right around seven batters a game. And he also spent, I think it was, he had a brief stint on the injured list. Now, with that being said, this isn't someone I think they brought in to be their stud, their big starter. They wanted someone with experience, and they wanted someone that can get the job done for them now and fill some of the holes that have been made because of injuries to their starting rotation now. And I think this is a really good start for them with 4 days to go.
Yeah, I love this move for the Orioles, honestly. They've filled part of their pitching problem, which is really their only glaring hole going into the trade deadline. I mean, Eflin was in the Phillies before the Rays, so I've been able to watch a lot of him play. And he's always been a consistent, like, mid-3 ERA to low-4 ERA guy. And he's more of a pitch-to-contact pitcher, which I think is going to fit actually perfectly in the updated Orioles, Oriole Park, because of the longer dimensions and everything. So I think, even though his strikeouts numbers are a little bit down as of late, like you mentioned, like, I don't think it's going to matter as much, because home runs that he probably would have been allowing at the Trop or anywhere else, I think is going to turn into a flyout at Camden Yards, which I think is going to help out the Orioles a lot. I think he's just a really consistent pitcher. You know what you're going to get from him. And for them, I think they just need a little bit. They just need consistency out of that, like, 4 or 5 spot in the rotation, even 3 spot, if that's where he ends up slotting in.
And they need to hope he stays healthy too. That's the other thing, because, you know, he's 30.
That's always been his biggest downfall. It's like, the talent's there. He's always consistent when he's playing, and it's just
And it's gonna be, can he stay healthy? And he's not getting any younger. He's 30 years old, which is not freakishly old. There's pitchers that go well into their 40s, but my point being is, you gotta hope the very thing that he was brought into, you know, help sort of combat was their injury problems. So you have to hope that he can himself maintain his health. So we will move on. There's only 2 more guys that I want to talk about. And honestly, I don't think it would be appropriate for me to lead this one off, Matt, because boys are making
– I can talk enough about Austin Hayes and Sir Anthony Dominguez and all those guys we moved.
Yeah, your boys made some moves here, and I actually like them a lot. So I'm – you know what? Why should I even talk about this? The floor is yours.
Yeah, so yesterday the Phillies and the Orioles made a trade for Austin Hayes, the 2023 All-Star outfielder for the Orioles, was traded to the Phillies for Christian Pache and Sir Anthony Dominguez. I think for both sides, it's actually a really solid deal, because Dominguez is a guy who he's shown throughout his career that he can be a really good 8th inning to a closer pitcher, which for the Orioles, they need a back-end bullpen pitcher. He's in the middle of a bad season for his standards, and he's on an expiring deal, so the Phillies didn't really have a need for him for the rest of this season. But I think for the Orioles to take a flyer on a guy like that, I think he has the potential with his fastball, his slider, filthy, filthy pitches. And then on the Philly side, I think this is a great move. Just, they need a platoon outfielder to fill in for Rojas, who's been struggling a lot, at least offensively. His defense has been really solid. But they'll probably platoon Hayes with Brandon Marsh in left field. And then Pache was just not the guy for the Phillies. So that wasn't really a big part of the move. But overall, I think it was really a great deal for both sides.
Yeah, and I think the one need that this addresses that is just so huge for Philadelphia was they needed somebody that could hit lefties. And, you know, I think him fitting in with that him going into a platoon with Brandon Marsh would fit really, really perfectly, because he suits that weak. He helps, I guess, combat that weakness they have, which has been some of the struggles against left-handed pitching, because that's where he kind of specializes. He's hitting .328 against lefties with an .894 OPS. So now you got guys in your arsenal who can attack pitchers from both arm slots. You have a guy who plays he's a plus defender. No, has really great range, is very athletic, is fresh off an all-star appearance, you know, last season. And, you know, I really think this is, because you've seen, there's been a little bit of skidding for every team is bound to have it, and as long of a season as this is. but you've seen some skidding from the Phillies as of recent. And I think bringing this guy in and the offensive production that he can provide, along with just how secure and of a plus defender he is, I really, really like this move just for depth. Because at the end of the day, you know, the teams that win championships are the teams that have the most depth. And I think when you can have several options, because that's the one thing that I think was tough for the Phillies when they, you know, made the World Series against Houston, was it felt like in that series, it felt like they eventually just kind of met their match. And I think the more that they can have a different display of guys who are contributors on both sides of the ball and really just have more depth than other teams in the league, I really think that you're just seeing this team get stronger and stronger. I'm really curious to see what they have remaining in the last couple of days of the deadline.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Joe, you can go.
I mean, I don't have much to add. I think you guys hit on both of the big points here. For Dominguez going to the Orioles, I think that's a great guy to slot in there with Bautista being out. Craig Kimbrell has been relied upon to be a closer, where at this juncture in his career, it's just it hasn't panned out too well, especially as of late. He blew a save to the Marlins the other day, which is saying something. So I think adding a guy who has the potential to be an eighth or ninth inning guy, you can pair with Yannick Cano. I think that's a great move for them. And then meanwhile, for the Phillies, as you said, Jack, perfectly slots in with Brandon Marsh, a guy who can crush lefties, as well as a guy who, you know, to platoon with a guy who has struggled against lefties. And as you talked about with death, like, they're getting to the point where they have like an embarrassment of riches in their lineup. And that is crucial come playoff time when you have not just nine guys who fill out your lineup, but you have that 10th, 11th, 12th guy who are also very capable, potential everyday players. When you get to the playoffs, you don't know who's going to be hitting 100 through the playoffs and who's going to be hitting 600. So when you have the more guys that you have, the more likelihood that you're going to find those guys who are going to happen to be on a hot streak when it comes playoff time. So when you have both Austin Hayes and Brandon Marsh, maybe one of them is really struggling in the playoffs and one of them's doing great. And when it gets to the playoffs and you might need a guy who can slot in every day and be huge at that 6-7 hole for them, I think that one or the other of those two, or whoever you have in this kind of situation where you have a platoon situation with two guys who have the potential to be everyday players, it just gives you more options to succeed when it comes to playoff time.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, you got some?
Just real quick. I think for we all know who Dave Dombrowski is as a general manager, especially Boston fans. At least for me, I was a bit worried going into the deadline to see how big of a move he would make and how many of our prospects we would lose. If this is the kind of move that Dave Dombrowski is going to do for the playoffs or for the trade deadline, I'm sure he has something else up his sleeve, but this is like not giving away prospects is something I think is so important for the team, and just giving away to expendable players for for Hayes, who has a really high upside for us. So I think it could be a really great move.
Yeah, Dave Dombrowski has never been a guy to shy away from selling your entire farm system for a World Series. I remember even during like most of the 2010s, the Red Sox had one of the worst farm systems in Major League Baseball for like a considerably long time, but it was because all of their talent was in the major leagues and it was bought and paid for by their farm system. As soon as Dombrowski leaves, Heim Bloom comes in, rebuilds our farm system to a place that it's never been before, and then he gets fired. So Freeheim. You make a good point. You do make a good point about Dave Dombrowski. I definitely like the move a lot. Lastly, but very much not least, the Red Sox are bringing back an old friend, left-handed pitcher James Paxton. This was a move that last season I was around the deadline, I'll be honest, saying that we should trade James Paxton because he was having a pretty decent season. I thought it was someone that we could generate some value from if there were any other pitchers that were desperate for some starting pitching, specifically left-handed pitching. And I also had that stance because I thought we were going to make the playoffs last year, and boy, was I wrong. That season just crashed and burned. But anyway, looking at the Red Sox right now, the biggest question mark is pitching. There's no doubt about it. The bullpen, as Joe and I both mentioned during the Yankees game, and even just recently, the bullpen has been really a tough watch. You never know what you're going to get on any given night. Now, James Paxton is not a bullpen arm, but he is a experienced workhorse lefty that is somebody who can really sort of be a huge addition to your pitching staff, because that's another place where, for some reason, the Red Sox are in a weird skid right now. You're seeing Cutter Crawford, who was a dog the entire season, is coming off a couple of his worst starts of the year. You're starting to see, Tanner Houck, who is still continuing to have a phenomenal season, but even he's been a little bit streaky as of recent. So to bring in another pitcher while this team is a pitcher who's played in Boston before and knows what it's like. Like, I always think that those trades are fantastic when you can bring back someone that's familiar with the organization and somebody that's familiar with the fans, has played in the park, knows what it's like to be there. I think it takes out it takes a whole layer out of this transition that you have to make to a new team that I think is always for the better. But for the Red Sox particularly, I think right now, if there's any place that they needed to build some depth at, it was starting pitching, and I like this move.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on everything there. Like bringing in the first, I don't think we've had a lefty start a game all year, except for like Brennan Bernardino as an opener, maybe. So having finally a lefty pitcher who can eat innings is perfect. And James Paxton, given the state of the rotation with Whitlock being out, every fifth day for a couple of months has been a bullpen day or a Cooper Criswell day. So having a guy who can eat innings and give your bullpen some rest so that they can perform better. The bullpen is as poor as it's performed. When you look at the names, these are guys that have put together some really good stretches of baseball over the past couple of years. I think that if they're able to be given more rest so they don't have to pitch as many innings, they aren't leaned on as heavily, I think this bullpen could be good enough. I still think they need another arm, but I think this bullpen isn't it's not as bad as it's looked recently. I think
Right.
that when they're given more rest, that they'll be okay. And as you were talking about with James Paxton bringing back a guy who's been to Boston before, the other big hole for the Red Sox is right-handed hitting, and specifically a guy who could maybe slot in on the infield as a platoon guy who checks all of those boxes, Justin Turner. I'd
Justin
love to see
Turner,
them go
yep.
out and get him. He can slot in at first base every other day, DH occasionally. I think that, he was the clubhouse leader last year. Like that's it makes all the sense in the world to go after him in terms of having another guy who's been here before, who's familiar with Boston, both the ballpark and the team. I think he checks every box.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with both of you guys on this move with Paxton. I just think it's what the Red Sox need. They need a veteran guy, and they need another starter for the rotation. I think he checks both of those boxes for sure. He's not a guy that's gonna, he's not a guy that's really gonna dominate, but he's also gonna be a guy that's just pretty consistently solid. And I think if the Sox make one more move, like you said, Joe, with the lineup, like not doing anything crazy, just picking up a veteran, picking up a right-handed bat, I think it's going to put them in a really good position for the rest of the season. And I don't know if it's just me, but it feels like the Red Sox and the Mets are like almost in a really similar situation where it's like their lineup is really good, but their pitching is just missing a couple pieces. And they're
I
both
think they're very similar. And you know what was made me notice that is like I'm a Red Sox fan and I'm covering the Mets this summer. And the amount of times I've been like, wow, I really think I'm involving myself with like the two just like most interesting teams in the league this year. Like I know it's very biased, but like
They're
I'm
fun teams. They're fun teams to watch.
yeah, they're both very interesting. They're both in very similar situations where they're exceeding expectations at the moment. And now that it's been accepted that they've exceeded those expectations, now have to make moves the remainder of the season and at this trade deadline to reflect that they've exceeded those expectations. So, lot that we unpacked here. It's a good show. I think what I'm most curious about in terms of not free agents, trade deadline. Well, actually, more free agent signings is I'll be curious to see what FUCB picks up from the new freshman class of Fordham students. Fordham Club Baseball obviously, could use a couple guys, could use some pitchers, could use some infielders, could use whoever wants to give us a chance and come try
But be
out.
careful, Jack.
So
You might get traded for cash considerations. You keep talking like that.
what'd you say?
You might get traded for cash considerations. You keep talking like that.
Oh, good God, no. Oh no, I've heard Matt Benson is listening to all offers on Jack Warner.
Yeah, Jack Warner is number one on our trade list.
Trade him for some minor leaguers. Anyway, that's gonna do it for this installment of Nosebleeds. You can tune back in with us next week, which should be a fun one because the trade deadline will have reached. All trades will be done. Obviously, we're hoping for some very juicy moves throughout the league. Hopefully, some stuff that leaves us gasping. Hopefully, some stuff that it could change the trajectory of some team seasons. Who knows? We'll have to cross that bridge when we get there. For Joe Henry, for Matt Benson, I'm Jack Warner signing off. Thank you for tuning in. We will see you next time.
Thank you.